Hari Om Sahana Vavantu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chapter 12, The Loving Dealings Between Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Jagadananda Pandit. Okay, we're on page 60. All glories to Jagadananda Pandit. He is so favored by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that anyone who meets him thinks, now I have gotten the association of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu directly. Jagadananda Pandit stayed at the house of Shivananda Sen for some time, and they prepared about 16 shears, about 15 kilograms, of scented sandalwood oil. Yeah, because a shear is 900 milliliters of scented sandalwood oil. They filled a large earthen pot with this aromatic oil, and with great care, Jagadananda Pandit brought it to Neelachal, Jagannath Puri. This oil was placed in the care of Govinda, and Jagadananda requested him, please rub this oil in the body of the Lord. Govinda therefore told Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jagadananda Pandit has brought some scented sandalwood oil. It is his desire that your worship apply a little of this oil on your head, so the blood pressure due to bile and air will be considerably diminished. He prepared a large jug of it in Bengal, and with great care he has brought it here. The Lord replied, a sannyasi has no use for oil, especially perfumed oil such as this. Take it out immediately. Srila Prabhupada. According to Raghunandana Bhattacharya, the spokesman for the smart and regulative principles, one who smears oil on his body while observing a vow in conjunction with a ritual, while bathing in the morning, while performing the Shraddha ceremony, or on Dwadasi day, may as well pour wine over his body. Therefore, oil should be rejected. This word, vrata, vow, is sometimes understood to refer to the sannyasa vrata. Raghunandana Bhattacharya has also said in his book, Titi Tattva, Gritam cha sparshaptam tailam, yat tailam pushpa vasitam, padushtam Pakva tailam cha, taila bhyange cha nityasa. This means that clarified butter, ghee, mustard oil, floral oil, and boiled oil may be used only by grihasthas, householders. Hmm. 312-109-120. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, deliver this oil to the temple of Jagannath, where it may be burned in the lamps. In this way, Jagadananda's labor in manufacturing the oil will be perfectly successful. When Govinda informed Jagadananda Pandit of this message, Jagadananda remained silent, not saying even a word. When 10 days had passed, Govinda again told Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is the desire of Jagadananda Pandit that your worship accept the oil. When the Lord heard this, he angrily said, why not keep a masseur to massage me? Have I taken sannyas for such happiness? Accepting this oil will bring my ruination, and all of you would laugh. If someone passing on the road smelled this oil on my head, he would think me a dadi sannyasi, a tantric sannyasi who keeps women. Hearing these words of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Govinda remained silent. The next morning, Jagadananda went to see the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Jagadananda Pandit, my dear Pandit, you have brought me some oil from Bengal, but since I am in the renounced order, I cannot accept it. deliver the oil to the temple of Jagannath so that it may be burned in the lamps. Thus your labor in preparing the oil will be fruitful. Jagadananda Pandit replied, who tells you all these false stories? I never brought any oil from Bengal. After saying this, Jagadananda Pandit took the jug of oil from the room and threw it down before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the courtyard and broke it. After breaking the jug, Jagadananda Pandit returned to his residence, bolted the door, and laid down. Verses 121 to 155. Jagadananda Pandit cooks for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. 312, 121, 154. 3 days later, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to the door of his room and said, my dear Jagadananda Pandit, please get up. I want you personally to cook my lunch today. I am going now to see the Lord in the temple. I shall return at noon. After Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said this and left, Jagadananda Pandit got up from his bed, bathed, and began to cook varieties of vegetables. After finishing his noontime ritualistic duties, the Lord arrived for lunch. Jagadananda Pandit washed the Lord's feet and gave the Lord a sitting place. He had cooked fine rice, mixed it with ghee, and piled it high on a banana leaf. There were also varieties of vegetables placed all around in pots made of banana tree bark. On the rice and vegetables were tulsi flowers, and in front of the Lord were cakes, sweet rice, and other prasadam of Jagannath. The Lord said, spread another leaf with a helping of rice and vegetables, so that today you and I may take lunch together. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu kept his hands raised and would not accept the prasadam until Jagadananda Pandit, with great affection and love, spoke the following words. Please first take prasadam yourself, and I shall eat later. I shall not refuse your request. In great happiness, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then accepted the lunch. When he had tasted the vegetables, he began to speak. Even when you cook in an angry mood, he said, the food is very delicious. This shows how pleased Krishna is with you. Because you will personally eat the food, Krishna makes you cook so nicely. You offer such nectarian rice to Krishna. Who can estimate the limit of your fortune? Jagadananda Pandit replied, He who will eat has cooked this. As far as I'm concerned, I simply collect the ingredients. Jagadananda Pandit continued to offer the Lord varieties of vegetables. Out of fear, the Lord said nothing but continued eating happily. Right, because he's already made him upset. He doesn't want to. Jagadananda Pandit eagerly forced the Lord to eat so much that he ate 10 times more than on other days. Again and again, when the Lord wished to get up, Jagadananda Pandit would feed him more vegetables. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dared not forbid him to feed him more. He just continued eating, fearful that Jagadananda would fast if he stopped. At last, the Lord respectfully submitted, my dear Jagadananda, you've already made me eat 10 times more than I am used to. Now please stop. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stood up and washed his hands and mouth, while Jagadananda Pandit brought spices, a garland, and sandalwood pulp. Accepting the sandalwood pulp and garland, the Lord sat down and said, now in front of me, you must eat. Jagadananda replied, my Lord, you go take rest. I shall take prasadam after I finish making some arrangements. Ramai Pandit and Raghunath Bhatta did the cooking, and I want to give them some rice and vegetables. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then told Govinda, you remain here. When the Pandit has taken his food, come inform me. After Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had said this and left, Jagadananda Pandit spoke to Govinda. Go quickly and massage the Lord's feet, he said. You may tell him the Pandit has just sat down to take his meal. I shall keep some remnants of the Lord's food for you. When he is asleep, come and take your portion. Jagadananda Pandit thus distributed remnants of the Lord's food to Ramai, Nandai, Govinda, and Raghunath Bhatta. He also personally ate the remnants of food left by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then the Lord again sent Govinda. The Lord told him, go see whether Jagadananda Pandit is eating. Then quickly returned and let me know. Seeing that Jagadananda Pandit was indeed eating, Govinda informed the Lord, who then became peaceful and went to sleep. The affectionate, loving exchanges between Jagannanda Pandit and Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued in this manner, exactly like the exchanges between Satyabhama and Lord Krishna related in Srimad Bhagavatam. Who can estimate the limit of Jagannanda Pandit's fortune? He himself is the example of his own great fortune. Anyone who hears about the loving exchanges between Jagannanda Pandit and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or who reads Jagannanda's book Prema Viravarta, can understand what love is. Moreover, he achieves ecstatic love of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada. The word Vivarta means accepting something to be the opposite of what it is. Here, Jagannanda Pandit appeared very angry, but his anger was a manifestation of his great love for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prema Vivarta is also the name of a book written by Jagannanda Pandit. Therefore, the author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami, uses the word Prema Vivarta to refer to one who reads the book or hears about Jagannanda Pandit's loving dealings with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In either case, such a person very soon achieves love of Krishna. 312-155. Praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Sri Raghunath, always desiring their mercy, I, Krishnadas, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, following in their footsteps. Thinking about something?
Yeah, I read somewhere. I don't know where people get stuff from, but I read in a research paper on the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur that Prabhupada was actually written by him, but he didn't want to put his name, so he put Jagannanda Pandit's name there.
Who knows where they get this stuff? And who cares anyway? Because the point is if it's written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, How is Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami mentioned?
That's why it clicked in my head.
Yeah, so the one difficulty that's there is everything is done as a matter of taste. Right? You do things because of taste. So if you have spiritual taste, you do spiritual, you materially do material things. So, you know, and in the field, you know, it's just like that. In business, the taste is, you know, is profit. So then one is going for that. So in the, you know, in administration is then power and influence. And so in the academic field, then it is the speculation, the possibilities. So when there's a motive, then they'll say things like this. You know, like you see, is, let's say the smartest may say things because they're trying to influence the Vaishnavas to think of all this and that, you know. But that'll be your you know, traditional, you know, academics. But then when you're dealing with the modern academics, then there's a great taste in thinking that you're showing some way to cause doubt or break down anything that is accepted as fact. Because in the modern academy, something stays as you know, a thesis or a theory as long as no one can disprove it. Its lifespan is simply that long. So if it's written really well or things, it may take longer to disprove it. You know, it's like Einstein. Then for so long, he's there. And then no one's coming up with anything different. So that at some point, they're dealing in these other areas. And then they think, oh, so Einstein didn't deal with this, we're going beyond, so he's finished. And then as they go farther, they see at the end of their equations, after they've done all these things and all that, and they get down, then they find his equations pop out. And then it's kind of like, okay, well, maybe we can't say he's totally off the wall, because only after they do many calculations, then they get to his. And so like that, that's the difficulty. So in here is that if they can break down anything, oh, you say it's this, but here it says this. For them, that's such taste. Mm. That's the difficulty. It's not that here it says this and there it says that. So what's the thing? No, it's the taste that maybe something you have faith in, I can say something that will break that faith. And that gives them unlimited taste. So that's the difficulty when you're dealing these fields, is that people will, anything that comes up in their mind that they see can be seen as a contradiction of that, they'll go after people's faith, because the point is to be a good academic, you can't have faith. You know, so I'm a better academic because, oh, I think critically, like that. But being critical is like, everybody does that. It's the major flaw of conditioned living entities, is fault finding. But they somehow know to think that they are so superior because they can find fault. It's like everybody finds fault. But somehow or another, that's there. And especially by finding the fault, they can break down faith in people's faith or support of something else, and it might bring it towards their direction. So that's a major flaw in modern academia. And so then, because there's no such thing as they're looking for the absolute truth. They'll talk about, but the absolute truth has to be what they agree to. You know, what their subjective view is. Because if you're going by the laws of nature, then what the laws show, that should be, you know, some aspect of the truth. But if the laws of nature don't agree with their particular perspective, you know, it's just like, how can you take me, you have unlimited, mass in the universe, right, that they know of. And they say that it's only I think, a tenth of what's there. Because by calculation, there's more, but they can't find it. You know, they don't know about the coverings of the universe, right? So then they're saying all this, but they have a theory which is against every principle that they have, that you could take all that mass, condense it into an infinitesimal point, and then that infinitesimal point will blow up and then everything will come out of there. It doesn't match anything. Because if you took even just a little bit of carbon and compress it, you get a diamond. And diamonds don't blow up. They just don't. You know? So this becomes the problem, is they have all these things that there's so many holes, but because they accept it, it must be true, even though it does not follow the laws of nature and what's observed. So that's the whole point, is that they've said it, therefore it's better. I don't know about now, I remember in the 50s when it became very, very popular, science was the thing. It was, man-made is better than natural. You know, so it's like you had a cotton shirt, but let's say a polyester one was better because it's man-made. You know, if you meddle with the way the vegetables grow, you know, like you get a bigger cauliflower and it's pure white and there's no blemishes, it's better than the natural one. When I was a kid, those ones were more expensive and the natural one was cheaper. You know, because that's just what they thought. Then after a while, I mean, there was already clamoring then in the 60s. People were talking about it since the 40s, the New Age, I mean, this New Age, food freaks. They were there way back, 30s, 40s, like that. So many books. So it started to gain traction, and then sometime later, I'm not sure when it became very big, but I think more towards the 90s it started, that, natural food and organic became the big thing. And when they saw they could make money off of it, because people wanted it, now that cauliflower before that was cheaper, now is more expensive. That big cauliflower was more expensive, now cheaper. So things run according to their subjectivity, what's good for them.
In India, it's still, if it's big, it's more expensive. If it's small, it naturally will.
Yeah. It's cheaper. Because in the West, they stopped using all those fertilizers and they sell them to India. So they're behind the curve. You know, they're ahead of the curve. If you use the tradition, they're way ahead. Or if they're modern, then they're behind. You know, so either way. So that becomes a major stumbling block. Is that before these things are just kicked out, because people spend so much time. It means you're going to spend so many years from an undergraduate to a doctorate degree. wasting your time and writing it the way everybody wants you to write, rather than, you know, how you would like to write it, present it. So then you can't be the idiot, you know. And so therefore then you have to give some credence. People who have degrees, they're of a higher stature, or they know more, they can understand better. When the Vedas don't agree with that, someone has devotion, they can understand. So if you're a great pandit like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and devotion, then yes, he's a great pandit and, you know, knows the Lord. But otherwise, then you see the Digvijay Pandit, he was so famous and all that, and he wasn't. So these kind of things that come up from false ego and all that. And then devotees find these things and spread it. Otherwise, someone should read that. That's stupid. And then it doesn't go out, but then they'll put it on the social media. It'll go out. It'll confuse people. The more people confuse, the more talking. The person who put it up feels good because, hey, I'm trending. And it's just what do you call it? A waste of everyone's time. But popular. So one should understand, these things have always been around. Anything that, you know, has, they'll always say something about it. Oh, it's this, it's that. I mean, they say Krishna, his form is material. So if they could say that about Krishna, why can't they say it about anything else? So that's why we stick to the Acharyas and what they say. Prabhupada's talking about this. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is talking about this. You know, so, you know, what's it? Who wrote the other one? What was it called?
Prema Pradeep.
Yeah, Prema Pradeep. So maybe that person's mixing it up with that. But it's a different story. It's like a miniature Jivadharma. You know, that kind of story and trying to and giving that in, you know, in a very small book.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's does that make it make sense?
It does. What's even more ironic about it is the person who makes that statement, his name is Jagannanda.
Yeah, what to do? Then there's the point is we do have the original, there is the title Pandit afterwards also.
I mean, this speculation is really amazing how devotees like to play with it, because with Shastra, Srila Prabhupada doesn't give any space for speculation.
Yes.
But as you explained, because there's a taste for this.
Yes.
Devotees, once one student wrote me, because we were studying Jivadharma. He said, because in an introduction and right in the beginning, it's explained in a very concise way how this was written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And then one wrote me, he said, no. It's Bhaktivinoda explaining his own previous incarnations in that book. Means he went through all those stages in previous lives. This is why he so clearly can explain it.
I see.
And I'm telling you, this version, very popular.
Oh yeah. But so then what about Brihad Bhagavatam?
Because you're mystifying the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, man, it sounds right.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I would want to be like that. So, and then I said no. And the guy was like, he was so frustrated with me, because I was like really strong. I said, it's not true. And he just dropped the issue and was like,
yeah, because it's something so tasty, you know.
I destroyed his rasa.
Yeah. That's it's sad that these things get traction. Well, previously they wouldn't. They wouldn't get out of the gate, you know.
Maharaj, one devotee commented that these are like some of the famous topics by which the devotees like to give headache to themselves.
Oh, okay.
So we don't do drugs, so.
We don't?
We don't do drugs, so this is.
Oh, this is another way that they do it. Yeah. Yeah, because that's why so much strong is on speculation, because we'll take it, oh, it's like, oh, he's the Mayavadi, so the, oh, yeah, all the smart is doing that, that's the karma. But it just means anything that's fruitive and anything that's not where you're taking the absolute truth and then thinking about it in ways that aren't recommended. It's actually that wide. You know, it's just like if I say yukta vairagya, then most will think, you know, cars, planes, phones, but just using your body in Krishna's service is yukta vairagya. You know? It just means connecting everything to Krishna. It means without identifying with it, without being attached to the results, you're using it for pleasing Krishna. So that's the thing, is that in bhava, yukta vairagya is inherent because you do everything for Krishna. You have that taste to serve Krishna, so you don't do anything that's not connected to Krishna. You don't do anything that's not pleasing to Krishna. So yukta vairagya is inherent. So we practice it as sadhana through our, you know, through intelligence. We try to understand is doing these things without attachment will be good for us. But that's the natural state for them.
Well, I mean, in one sense, you could say on the bhava platform, there's not even any vairagya.
No, but here vairagya means nothing is done for yourself. It's only done for Krishna.
Yeah, right.
So yukta means connected to Krishna, and vairagya means anything that's not connected to Krishna. Like that. So that's the whole point. And what's done for Krishna is just for Krishna. It's not for yourself. Like that. So it's not a matter of the externals, what kind of sadhana they're practicing or lifestyle. It's about the attitude that is not there. Is that okay? So therefore, it's inherent within. That's one of the ways that you can, you know, these are symptoms of the bhava sadhana.
Mm-hmm.
Is that they're on that platform where, you know, they're always that, you know, Rupa Goswami gives those, I think it's 9 qualities in Nectar of Devotion of symptoms of someone who's on the platform of bhava.
Six.
So yeah. So we always have to be careful of this. Because generally speaking, is that it's generally more obvious when it's sensual, sense gratification. And so that's not seen because there's always also that thing of nowadays we have the sense of morality, but not traditional morality. It's whatever we decide. You know, there's particular non-theistic social morality that, you know, somehow or another we can get some benefit from. So then, but if mental speculation, that sense gratification, that's not tagged. It's not flagged that this is wrong, because it's seen intellectuals are higher and this and that. But instead of using the Brahminical and the Brahminical qualities, right? Because the Brahmin means he's humble, he has all these qualities. The modern, you don't have to be humble to be good. If you are, it's nice. It means they'll mention, yeah, he's a nice guy, but that's not why he's, you know, getting his Nobel Prize. It's because the guy can speculate like anything. And so the general thing is that pride goes with it. No one's going to complain. They may not like the guy as a person, but they can't complain that he's not a great thinker. You know what I'm saying? So because this is being allowed in, we stop the one side, but then this comes in. And from that, as it mentioned, when you get into these things where there's nothingness and there's no standards, it brings you right around to the bottom of gross sense gratification. I probably said the effect of Buddhism would be gross sense gratification, or Mayavada would be gross sense gratification. So it's just another way to go about it. You know, if you do direct, oh, that's not proper. But if you deal indirectly, then Maya tricks it. Yeah. Yes?
We also found that the one of the most difficult things to train devotees is that somehow, because of the previous impressions, they think that in order to become successful, we have to destroy the view or the vision of the previous teachers. And they look like you explained, they look for the fault, and then based on that fault, and then this is as if they think it is faulty, they see the contradiction and then play with it.
Mm-hmm.
But what actually happens, then each acharya, if we see how it develops,
mm-hmm.
then nourishes the previous one, nourishes the next one.
Yeah.
And then it goes and then it develops. And then Srila Prabhupada gives us, you know, the complete teaching of Lord Chaitanya based on all the previous acharyas.
Mm-hmm.
Although if we prematurely take and try to study previous acharyas, we see apparent contradiction. It's very obvious. Like if we take Vishwanath Chakravarti and Baladev Vidyabhushana, even on the same verse of Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam, because the view is different.
Mm-hmm.
So devotees they grab it and say, oh, look, this doesn't match.
Mm-hmm.
But from material point of view, it doesn't match.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to learn how to harmonize it. And Srila Prabhupada already did, so we just have to follow, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't have to speculate.
Right.
But still, that tendency, because of the training in school and university and whatever it is, then people think and then run around with these ideas, which actually, it has nothing to do with the realities, because even if we look at the, you know, life of six Goswamis, those who live together, they were in complete harmony with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we teach Laghu Bhagavatamrita, it's actually from Chaitanya Charitamrita. The whole teaching of Laghu Bhagavatamrita wasn't even spoken to Rupa Goswami. It was spoken to Sanatana Goswami. It's really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's obvious they work together on this.
Mm-hmm.
But then Rupa Goswami is the author, and Sanatana Goswami doesn't mind.
Yeah, well, because they'll discuss these things, because they're always talking about Krishna.
Yeah.
And then in that inspiration of the discussion, then Rupa Goswami wants to write something down. It's just because you have the aspect, because Rupa Goswami will see Sanatana Goswami as his guru, so then he'll say so many things, and then the essence of that, you know, as giving is so important that then he'll document the work to establish that. Just like Rupa Goswami will say things, Jiva Goswami will write works to document what Rupa Goswami has said. Yeah, so, yeah, that's the thing. The descending, then there's no problem, because it's, as Prabhupada mentioned, it's like putting one rock in a pond. You got all these concentric circles. But, yeah, no, it's sad. It's just one of the mentalities that's there in the material consciousness by the combination of modes. So it's nothing new. But Maya is so, because you're dealing with chewing the chewed. There's nothing new. But Maya makes it look like it's something new. And so they'll think, I'm coming up with this, this is a new thing. No one's thought like this before, but it's no. People have always thought like this. You know, they've always thought like this. You know, thinking about, you know, professionals working in such a way that philosophy doesn't get in the way of their making money. That was going on at the time of Socrates. You know, that's that 3,000 years ago. You know, so it's like, these things have always gone on. It's just that sometimes they're more prominent and sometimes you don't see them. So there's nothing new. But Maya's so clever. That's the covering potency. She'll cover so you think it is, and then she'll put you in a different situation. And then, ooh, this is new.
In Russian, we have a saying that there's nothing new under the sky.
Yes, yes.
In a song.
Yes, it's just that's it. There's nothing new. But people want to, and that's the Munis. Because that's the thing. If Muni says something of value, then naturally it's documented in that, like that, and it's used. But the point is that position that they have, that they have to establish their philosophy over someone else's. And they'll all fight amongst each other. You get one academic and a bunch of others who are not. then he'll be the, you know, the king of the pile. But as soon as you bring in another academic, then if it's them and the general public, they'll work together to establish their position. But once that's established, then they'll fight each other over, you know, who's king of the mountain. Something?
Yeah, we just came from Vrindavan, and you know, they're great, you know, musicians in there, in the north. And then one devotee, he's particularly good. And then he came and he chanted the tune of Damodarastaka. In the north, they have, you know, the two beat.
Yeah, they're like,
which is very, which is very simple.
Yeah.
And here in Bengal, it's much more. Yeah, it's much more elaborate and beautiful. Hmm. So, because he's such a good musician, some years back, he figured out how to. It's a Bengali melody actually, but he just did some embellishment on that, and that was perfect, and everybody loved it. But this year he came, and he did something. But because he's an artist, he had to change something, and he spoiled the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I asked all the guys, because I was thinking it's my personal perception, so you know, who am I to criticize, you know, the Gandharva?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But then I asked the boys, you know, they have like their team. So I asked the boys from his team, and I said. And they all said, no, we didn't like it. And even them, they asked him. But he says, no, every year whenever I come, I have to bring something new. But this is stupid. Instead of going deep, you have to do something new. But what was there before, it was really good. Everybody liked it. Yeah. And everybody actually was waiting for that.
For that, yeah. Yeah.
But then he just spoiled the whole thing.
Yeah, because it's about his, I have to do something
new. Yeah.
The point is you can use the same tune. It's like when Sri Prahlad sings. The same tune, same way. Everybody can sing in the same way. But when he's singing, he'll do some little embellishment here and there that we won't sing.
Yeah.
We'll just sing the straight tune. But he'll do some stuff that, you know, it's not a change in the tune. It's just something because he knows music. So that means every time he sings... Sings that, you know, he'll sing, we'll sing. When he sings again, there's always some slight change, but you can always sing. So he may never actually technically sing it the same way twice, but it's always the same tune that you can go, the same flavor, the same experience. That's actually what music is. That you completely have to, you know, do this. That's
fear of. Fear of not being in trend. Somebody else comes in.
Yeah.
Because I remember, I think it was late 70s, early 80s. Then in Vrindavan, every year Drishtadyumna Maharaj would come and he'd sing the same tune, the same way. And that was, you looked forward to it. You know, it was like, that became the, you know, the trendy tune because it was always the same, always. And people still sing it today. They may not know, you know, how it got popularized, but that's the thing. And here also, the same guys sing the same way for the last 30 years, and that's what makes, you don't have to worry about how to sing it. Like some of these things is you can't even follow the tune, you know, so how do you get into the word, the moods, the folk, because you're trying to figure out the tune.
Bhuvaneshwar said. About Madhava, he once commented, this guy only knows one tune, he must be
good. He must be good. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so it's, how you say, if it works, why, you don't have to change it. It means even the devotees, that original tune that Prabhupada was using, he just picked the one tune. For years, so it got to the point that was the Hare Krishna tune, and then I think sometime later, someone had a different tune, and the devotees were all freaked out. No, that's not the tune. This is the tune. Like that. Yeah.
You're singing something else.
Yeah, it just didn't work. It's not the. Yeah, so it's just that it's just the tricks of the mind in speculation and all that, or the tricks of the mind in engaging the senses or engaging the mind, because the mind is the, you know, how do you say, the 11th sense, and it controls all the others. So it's also a big field for trying to taste things, and so then one has to be careful that, you know, staying. That's why it says, the Prabhupada says, you know, following in the, you say, when we say following the footsteps, it's just, you know, you just think of walking behind the person. But Prabhupada many times say following the footprints. That means exactly where they step, that's where you have to step. Not just kind of there, but just exactly, and then it'll work. No? Yeah. Okay. Chapter 13. Pastimes of Jagannatha the Pandit and Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. Particularly, one should not criticize a Vaishnava even if they are actually at fault. Comes up just after we spent, what is it, half an hour of the Adhyayatha, because Krishna's Kaviraj knows. Okay, now you heard this, now you may. Okay, now this chapter. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives the following summary of the 13th chhapter in his Amrita Prabaha Bhasya. Thinking Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was uncomfortable sleeping on bark of banana trees, Jagannanda made a pillow and quilt for him. The Lord, however, did not accept them. Then Srup Damodar Goswami made another pillow and quilt from finely shredded plantain leaves, and after strongly objecting, the Lord accepted them. With the permission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jagannanda Pandit went to Vrindavan, where he discussed many devotional subjects with Sanatana Goswami. There was also a discussion about Mukunda Saraswati's garment. When Jagannanda returned to Jagannath Puri, he presented Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with some gifts from Sanatana Goswami, and the incident of the pilu fruit took place. Once Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became ecstatic upon hearing the songs of a Devi Dasi, unaware of who was singing. He ran toward her through thorny bushes. But when Govinda informed the Lord that it was a woman singing, he immediately stopped. By this incident, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed everyone that sannyasis and Vaishnavas should not hear women singing. When Raghunath Bhatta Goswami left Varanasi on his way to Jagannath Puri after completing his education, Raghunath Bhatta also studied in Varanasi.
Maharaj, he stayed in Varanasi along with his father.
Oh, he lived there.
Oh, he's from there. Oh, no, but
Mishra.
Yeah, I think he was born there and he grew up there. Tapan Mishra's son.
Oh. Because when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu...
Oh, Tapan Mishra. Okay.
His father was instructed by Mahaprabhu.
Yes, okay. When Raghunath Bhatta Goswami left Varanasi on his way to Jagannath Puri after completing his education, he met Ramadasa Vishwasa Pandit. Vishwasa Pandit was very proud of his education, and being an impersonalist, he was not very well received by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Summary of the life of Raghunath Bhatta Goswami ends this chapter. Shloka Anucharana. Summary of verses 1 to 20. Jagannanda Pandit makes a bed for Lord Chaitanya. 21 to 41. Jagannanda Pandit requests to go to Vrindavan. 42 to 70. Jagannanda Pandit visits Vrindavan. 71 to 77. Jagannanda Pandit returns to Jagannath Puri. 78 to 88. Lord Chaitanya hears the songs of the Devi Dasi. Devadasi. 89 to... Oh. It's a difference. It's Devadasi. Not Devidasi. Everyone always says Devidasi, but no, they're Devadasis.
This.
Because that was a complaint once, that one of the ladies was saying that, oh, they're calling us Devidasis, you know, like this is us, you know, that this... No, they're Devadasi. Deva is masculine, so their dasi means a female servant of Deva, who is Jagannath. Well, Devi dasi means Radharani Devi dasi, your servant of Radharani Devi. Yeah, but many take it Radharani Devi dasi, but it's actually Radharani Devi dasi. So even how it's being put together is wrong, and then this is Devadasi. I never caught that before.
I think Devadasi generally represents like those who are serving Lord Jagannath. I think there is also the term of Devadasi who are in the line of this Shaktas. Oh. They worship Devis.
Oh, okay. So they're worshippers of Shakti. Okay. Okay. Then 89-139, the story of Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, verses 1-20. Jagannanda Pandit makes a bed for Lord Chaitanya. 3:13-1-20. Let me take shelter at the lotus feet of Lord Gaurachandra. His mind became exhausted, and his body very thin from the pain of separation from Krishna. But when he felt ecstatic love for the Lord, he again became fully developed. Our glories to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, our glories to Nityananda Prabhu, our glories to Advaitacharya, and all glories to all the devotees of the Lord. In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would taste various transcendental relationships of pure love in the company of Jagannanda Pandit. The unhappiness of separation from Krishna exhausted the Lord's mind and reduced the structure of his body. But when he felt emotions of ecstatic love, he again became developed and healthy. Because he was very thin when he lay down to rest on the dry bark of plantain trees, it caused him pain in his bones. All the devotees felt very unhappy to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in pain. Indeed, they could not tolerate it. Then Jagannanda Pandit devised a remedy. He acquired some fine cloth and colored it with red oxide. Then he filled it with cotton from a shimula tree. In this way he made a quilt and pillow, which he then gave to Govinda, saying, "Ask the Lord to lie on this." You know shimula? That's the one with the thorns on it. Has these big, huge red flowers. And when they dry, you break the flowers. It's a super fine, it's like silk. It's like how cotton is fluffy, and it grows on the cotton bush. This would be the same, like fluffy, but it's silk. So it's actually softer.
Are they using still?
Yes, yes. It means, I don't know now, can you still get them? You used to be able to get them in Navadvip and stuff like that, shimul pillows. They're much, much softer. But at the same time, they're not, you know, they have body, but they're very far out. So in other words, this would be the best quality pillow you could make, you know, quilt.
But he wants to make, he's not doing just a mattress, a pillow is doing a mattress also, right?
Well, the quilt, maybe the quilt is you lay on it or
so
something.
Up until that time, what was Lord Chaitanya sleeping on?
Said the banana tree bark.
Yeah.
Because banana tree bark's like thick like this, and it dries, and it'll give a little bit of spring, so something I guess you can pile it up or that, but, you know, it won't be that great. You know, because things are only that wide, you know, so if you move, then they all...
There was a devotee in... I'm not sure if he still does, but there was a devotee in the Melbourne temple at the Brahmacharya Ashram. He always used a brick as a pillow.
Hmm.
He slept on the hard floor with a brick as a pillow.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, pretty far out.
Definitely, he never overslept.
No, it was up early in very austere.
Yeah, no, it's amazing what people can do. Good, be so austere. So he colored it with red oxide, means the Gerua Mati, you know, what would be used for a diamond cloth. So he wanted to make it as proper for them. Jagannanda said to Sri Damodar Goswami, "Today, please personally persuade Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to lie down on the bed." When it was time for the Lord to go to bed, Sri Damodar stayed nearby. But when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw the quilt and pillow, he was immediately very angry. The Lord inquired from Govinda, "Who has made this?" When Govinda named Jagannanda Pandit, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was somewhat fearful. After asking Govinda to put aside the quilt and pillow, the Lord lay down on the dry banana bark, right? Because otherwise he might have said something, but keep it on the side. Sri Damodar said to the Lord, "I cannot contradict your supreme will, my Lord, but if you do not accept the bedding, Jagannanda Pandit will feel great unhappiness." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, "You might as well bring a bedstead here for me to lie on. Jagannanda wants me to enjoy material happiness. I am in the renounced order, and therefore I must lie on the floor. For me to use a bedstead, quilt, or pillow would be very shameful. When Swoop Damodar returned and related all these incidents, Jagannanda Pandit felt very unhappy. Then Swoop Damodar Goswami devised another method. First, he secured a large quantity of dry banana leaves. He then tore the leaves into very fine fibers with his nails and filled two of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's outer garments with the fibers. In this way, Swoop Damodar made some bedding and a pillow, and after much endeavor by the devotees, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted them. Everyone was happy to see the Lord lie down on that bed, but Jagannanda was inwardly angry, and externally he appeared very unhappy. Verses 21 to 41. Jagannanda Pandit requests to go to Vrindavan. 3:13, 21 to 34. Formerly, when Jagannanda Pandit had desired to go to Vrindavan, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had not given his permission, and therefore he could not go. Now, concealing his anger and unhappiness, Jagannanda Pandit again asked Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for permission to go to Mathura. With great affection, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "If you are angry with me, then you go to Mathura. Oh, when you go to Mathura, you are merely become a beggar and criticize me." Grasping the Lord's lotus feet, Jagannanda Pandit then said, "For a long time I have desired to go to Vrindavan. I could not go without your lordship's permission. Now you must give me permission, and I shall certainly go there." Because of affection for Jagannanda Pandit, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not permit him to depart. But Jagannanda Pandit repeatedly insisted that the Lord give him permission to go. Jagannanda then submitted a plea to Swoop Damodar Goswami. "For a very long time," he said, "I have wanted to go to Vrindavan. I cannot go there, however, without the Lord's permission," which at present he denies me. He says, "You are going because you are angry at me." "Naturally, I have a desire to go to Vrindavan. Therefore, please humbly request him to grant me his permission." Thereafter, Swoop Damodar Goswami submitted his appeal at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Jagannanda Pandit intensely desires to go to Vrindavan. He begs for your permission again and again. Therefore, please permit him to go to Mathura and then return. You permitted him to go see Mother Sachi in Bengal. You may similarly permit him to go see Vrindavan and then return here. At the request of Swoop Damodar Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu granted Jagannanda Pandit permission to go. The Lord sent for him and instructed him as follows. "You may go as far as Varanasi without encountering disturbances. But beyond Varanasi, you should be careful, very careful to travel on the path in the company of the Kshatriyas." Srila Prabhupada. In those days, the path from Varanasi to Vrindavan was infested with robbers, and therefore there were Kshatriyas to protect travelers. 3:13:35. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, "As soon as the plunderers on the road see a Bengali traveling alone, they take everything from him, arrest him, and do not let him go." Srila Prabhupada. Bengalis are generally not very stout and strong. Therefore, when a lone Bengali traverses the roads of Bihar, the plunderers on the... makes it a little bit more clear. The plunderers on the road capture him, rob all his belongings, and kidnap him for their own service. According to one opinion, the rogues of Bihar know very well that Bengalis are intelligent. Therefore, these thieves generally force the Bengalis into service requiring intelligence and do not allow them to leave. 3:13:36-37.
What ashram
is Jagannanda? He's a pandit, so he must be
Brahman. I mean, householder?
No, I don't think so.
He's asking permission from Jagannanda Mahaprabhu, like that more of the Brahmacharya.
Yeah. I don't think he's his sister. Yeah. 36:37. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, "When you reach Mathura, you should remain with Sanatana Goswami and offer respectful obeisances to the feet of all the leading men there. Do not mix freely with the residents of Mathura. Show them respect from a distance. Because you are in a different platform of devotional service, you cannot adopt their behavior and practices." Srila Prabhupada. The residents of Vrindavan and Mathura are devotees of Krishna in parental affection. and their feelings always conflict with the opinions of smarta Brahmins. Devotees who worship Krishna in opulence cannot understand the parental devotional feelings of the residents of Mathura and Vrindavan, who follow the path of spontaneous love. Devotees on the platform of Vidhimarg, regular devotional principles, may misunderstand the activities of those on the platform of Ragamarg, devotional service and spontaneous love. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Jagannanda Pandit to remain apart from the residents of Vrindavan, who are spontaneous devotees, so as not to become disrespectful towards them.
So this is quite different. That instruction is different from us trying to understand the Vrindavasis by wondering why they're doing this, why they're doing that.
Yeah, this is just that they're in a different category. If they're born there, that's their place. They don't even get involved. Because they have their own, you know, probably they have their own relationship with Krishna. They're born there, that's like that. So you just he's mentioning here is that they're working on this element of rag and all that. We follow Vaidhi. So that's the interesting thing. Lord Chaitanya is specifically pointing out that, you know, our path, we're following all these rules and regulations.
Yes.
So their path is not for us. So how they do things, how they like that, it's not how we do. We follow our acharyas and they do whatever they do that we don't worry about. No, we're respectful. We deal very nicely with them, but we don't get too close. They just have a different. Okay. Okay, we'll have to.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada Hare Ki Jai. Somehow I always thought that instruction was to Sanatana Goswami, but it was to Jagannanda Pandit.
I think he did that.
Sanatana Goswami also.
When there was a woman and Madam Mohan was playing at her cave and she was brushing her teeth and stirring the tea tree, that's the story. And Sanatana Goswami told her she has to follow the rules, and then the tea tree was late, everything was late because she was doing all the necessary stuff. And that's how Sanatana Goswami got Madam Mohan, his deity. And then the Lord instructed him, you don't instruct the Jitvasis.
Yeah, don't interrupt with the
devotional practice. Yeah.